Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Stefan Schuck of the Soul Collective. Schuck is a physician and musician based in Paris, France, who has gathered an all-star cast for the second Soul Collective LP, A Brief History of Blindness. The guests include former REM bassist Mike Mills, acclaimed singer-songwriter Amy Mann, and Chris Stamey and Gene Holder of the DBs. With production from Stamey and contributions from his longtime friend and collaborator Mitch Easter, as well as former XTC member Andy Partridge, the record features a cohesive set of compositions that move well beyond audience expectations. I recently spoke with Schuck about the making of the album, including the contributions of Lynn Blakey, formerly of Let's Active, who passed shortly before this episode was released. That's Stefan Schuck of the Soul Collective on Into Music, coming up now. I just kind of want to say to people, if they see the names associated with the album and they think that they already know what it sounds like, they don't. Because it's different than what one would expect.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of surprise inside this new album. You know, there are some songs that are very different, but we try to keep a cohesion between all the songs together. But, you know, we have different singers, different feelings. So it's a concept that I love, that I like a lot, you know, collaboration with musicians.
Yeah, because to me, it's like there's like a strong European sensibility, kind of almost progressive rock. But then you have these, you know.
You're right. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, I'm writing complex songs. There's a lot of chords. There's a lot of changes of chords. And by the way, I try to be simple, you know, but I fail. So this is maybe what you call, you know, progressive. And Paul McCartney used to say that make simple is the most difficult. So we always try to add some layers and to try some strings and to add billions of guitars. And sometimes you just have to be straight to the point. And I know I'm not very good at this.
But then, as you said, too, there is that sense of cohesion, because as I move from song to song, even if we're changing singers and so forth, I'm still going, oh, it's the same band.
Yes, because I think there is two explanations for this. First is Chris Stamey, you know, our producer, and I will tell you all the story because I'm living a dream. It's just amazing. And Chris is an incredible producer. You know, he does some magic. And the feeling you have, it's always the same band, is because we recorded live in the studio at Fidelitorium, the Mitch Easter studio. And we almost all the songs were recorded by a core rhythmic session, you know, with a drummer, a bass, a keyboardist, and me on guitar. So it was Rob Ladd on drum, Jan Holder on bass, Wes Latshot on keyboard, and we play live in the studio. So I think we capture this band feeling that you heard in the album.
Well, let's talk about Chris. How did he sort of come on your radar? Were you a fan of his music for a long time? Or
yes, it's an amazing story. And be careful because I can talk about this during hours. So I will try to make it simple. But when I was a teenager, you know, in France, I was living in Normandy, and we have some English radio that we can hear, you know, English radio, because there's just a channel over. And that's the first time I heard the DBs. And it was their first two albums, and there was this song, Happenstance, you know, on Repercussion. And this is the song, when I listen to this song, I say, I want to play music because of this song. Even before the Beatles, and this song, I tell, it's wonderful. I want to play music because of this song. And life is just totally amazing. Because on our first tour, I played Happenstance with Chris on stage. It was something for me totally stratospheric. No. So I'm a fan of his music since a very long time.
Wow. Now, have you seen the DBs live?
I've got another story about this. This is totally crazy again. But in my first life, I'm a medical doctor. So I work a lot in oncology and research. And when I was a young student, the DBs made a show in Normandy, which is totally crazy. And it was the day before my exams of medical school, you know. And during 4 months, I said, I want to see the DBs, but the day after I have my exam. And so I made the choice to pass my exam. And so I never see the DBs. But I met Chris, Jen, and Will Wigby, and Peter Holsepple. Magical.
Yeah. I ask because I guess it was 2024. You know, they reissued the first two albums.
Yes.
And then they did some shows. So I drove up to Minnesota. It's like a 10-hour drive to see them.
Oh.
And I was going to go to another show the next night. And they were so good. I was just like, I can't spoil this by seeing another band, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. I love them so much. You know, I listen to their music nearly every day. You know, they are in all my playlists. And working with Chris and Jean is magical. Really, really. And I've got another little story with Chris. Because all my musical field with the US start with Scott Miller. Maybe you know he was the leader of Game Theory and Loud Family. And I became friend with him by a little story. And he introduced me to Chris Stamey, but I already knew him. And he was saying, if I can only made five people listening to Chris Stamey, I will have done my job. So he was a huge fan of Chris. Really.
Wow. That's amazing. So you travel to Mitch's place, which is this, it's a legendary spot. And he's, you know, a legendary, you know, master of of recording and so forth. What is that space like for you as a musician when you go into it? You know, do you start feeling like, wow, there's been a lot that's been done here? Or do you just say, okay, it's a studio, we're going to record songs, you know?
It's kind of blend of two feelings. You have the feelings of all the bands that have been there. So it gives you a little of pressure, you know, and say, I have to be good. I have to play well the part. And by the way, Mitch is so kind, you know, that you don't feel after 10 minutes this pressure, you know, this pressure on you. And I have the same experience because I recorded in Abbey Road in London in the Beatles studio. It was totally crazy to be in studio number two in Abbey Road because you still have the piano of Lady Madonna and, you know, it's totally crazy. And it was the same, you have this pressure, but as soon as you begin to play, you know, this pressure is going away and you try just to feel so happy because you're here. You know, it's kind of wellness, you know, totally wellness. And because I was with all these guys, you know, they are so good. They are so good musicians that playing with them incredible.
So how long in total did you spend on the actual recording of the album? Did it go very quickly, or?
It's a very long process. Very, very long. By the way, sorry for my French accent. I can hear it. And apologize for this.
No.
I think it's because of the process of creation that we have. I'm writing the music. So I make some demos that I send to Chris. And Chris say, well, this one is good. This one, you should work again. And Chris is making some very basic arrangement, you know, just about the structuration of the song. And sometimes, by example, Cloud to Cloud, which is our last single, I guess there are 15 versions, you know, of the song, with the pre-chorus only one time, and the bridge doing a double time, and one with no bridge, Chris is really good at this, you know. He finds the good situation, and then after we have different singer, you know. And the concept is very simple: is that we send the music, only the music, with no indication to the singer, and the singer has totally freedom for the lyrics and for the melodic line, you know, and the vocal lines, and so. It's really curious to see how the song is evolving, you know, because at the beginning it's kind of big piece of stone, and then everybody, you know, is working on this stone, and at the end is something incredible. So this process is very long, and after when we are ready, you know, we go in studio to record and doing things. And we also doing things in our home studio in Europe, in England, in the US.
So is there part of it, though, when that process is going and there's that kind of sculpting you were talking about?
Yeah.
Even though it's like a long time, is there also something rewarding about that where it's like, oh, this is here. I didn't know this was here. This could be interesting.
Yes, sometimes it happens. So sometimes you have some happy accident, you know, because it's nearly the end of the song, and at the last time you hear something and say, wow, we should go on with these things. I think it's good. And so sometimes we have to say, stop. You know, you have to say, this is enough. But, you know, it's never ending. And it's a difficult moment when you say the song is over, because you always want to try something. But Chris is very good at, you know, at the end, he can send you dozens of versions of the song, saying, just moving this. It's really something very, very, he's an artist in the really first sense, you know. Amazing.
You wound up with Andy Partridge on working with Andy Partridge here too.
Yeah.
Who's essentially retired, but seems to continue writing songs every now and again.
Yes. This is another crazy story. You know, sometimes I'm concerned with my mental health, you know, because playing with all these people, sometimes you say, wow, it's just impossible, you know. And all the things with Andy Partridge is Chris, because he spoke with Andy, and Andy co-wrote with him a song, which is You Swallowed the Sun. And he also worked on the song with Jason Faulkner. You know, Jason is a lead singer. And the song is signed Chuck Stamey Partridge. And for me, these two men are just my two gods, you know. Say Andy Partridge and Chris Stamey. And I hope that there will be more collaboration between Chris and Andy, even if he's retired. But during these things, I have the feeling that he's retired, but music's still here. You know, he still has billions of ideas. So I hope there will be some following, but Maybe you hear the album with these two songs where he's involved, the one with Jason and the one with Chris, and I'm very proud of this.
It's sort of one of those things like don't ever think that your dreams are too crazy, right?
Yes, it's something like this. And you know, we also have Matthew Cowes from Nada Surf. I mean, I saw him live at his first gig in France decades ago, and I was a huge fan. We also have Amy Mann on the album, and I'm a huge fan of Amy Mann. And my son, who is 20 years old, wants to marry with Amy Mann. Since he's a little boy, he's a huge fan. And it was really something when she said, yes, I'm interested to sing on two songs. And we also have Lynn Blakey. I love her so much. We are working since two albums together. And her voice is just great and wonderful.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Lynn because obviously there's the Let's Active stuff and so forth. I feel like she probably hasn't done as much recording over the years as some of her contemporaries.
Yes, she's very close to Chris. And when I started working with Chris, we were looking for a female singer, you know, because I really love to have a female singer on songs. Again, it's a heritage of Scott Miller. You know, Scott Miller was like a lot to blend male vocals and female vocal together. I always have this feeling. And so we say we should try to have Lynn. And that's the way, of course, I knew her with Let's Active and things like that. And she just sing on one verse, and I said, wow. Yes, go on with Lynn, no problem.
Obviously, I don't think you could ever assemble this whole cast again for a live performance, but is there any possibility of some kind of live performance to accompany the album?
Yes, we're working on this, and we, in 2024, we made a little tour with a six concert. There was Chris Temme, Jen Holder, Matthew, Lynn. And so it's possible to happen. And we like to play in Los Angeles and have Amy Mann and Jason Faulkner with us. So we are trying to make this possible. And I also make them come into Paris to give a concert in Paris. We already did this 2 years ago. It was wonderful. But it's very difficult with the agenda of everybody, you know, because... But, you know, if you start in advance, we have chance. And I think that we will have some concert in 2026, for sure, in the US.
You deal with people who have cancer. And, of course, some of your patients, you know, are not going to live. Is music anyway sort of a release from that, or is that just a fact of being a physician and just something you just say, well, that's how it is. I can't become too emotional about it.
Yes, you have to always to have a step back, even if it's difficult. But I have a very, very particular story because I was very ill 3 years ago. I have an acute leukemia, you know, and I have a bone marrow transplantation with my son, who gave his cells to me. So I was in a sterile room for 5 months. Mm-hmm. And I have my computer and my guitar. And so you have to sterilize the guitar because I have, you know, I was totally with no antibodies or things like that. But I have my guitar when I was in this tricky situation. And so I have time to think about how music could help you in the worst moment of your life. And it's something really amazing how music can change your mind and give you some hope. You know, it's and I was really addict during these 5 months. I listened to music all the time, all the time. You know, and the nurses say, I'm speaking to you, get on your headphone. And so, yes, you always have to take a step back and not to be too emotionally involved and to give the best you can give to the patient, you know, because it's situations that are complicated. So if you have the feeling that you give them all the things that you can give to them, you feel in peace, you know. And I'm also involved a lot in research on new drugs and testing new drugs in oncology. And it's something very, very exciting because it's evolving fast. And there are some real hope now. We are living a very good period for this.
Truly, in your situation, music was that thing that was helping you through. And I would imagine that, I guess any moment in life, if you've got that something, right, that's going to carry you out of the darkness, that can only help. Yeah. That can only help, right?
Yes, exactly. And at the time, I was already working with Chris when I was at the hospital. And you say each email and each things related to music between Chris and me at this period was magical for me because it gave me a direction. And of course, you have all the other direction, your family, your kids, your friends. But it was a huge, and maybe I'm here because of the music, I can say. And of course, the chemotherapy and the bone marrow transplantation. But I'm pleased to think that music is for something into this.
You've been listening to a conversation with Stefan Schuck of The Soul Collective. The band's album, A Brief History of Blindness, is out now and can be ordered at propellersoundrecordings.com or via Bandcamp. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening, and as always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson.